On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we discuss Carl Nassib coming out of the closet, saying he's gay. We talk about how well he executed that announcement and what it means for the Raiders this season. We also rank the top eight skill players next season, who we think will be the top eight, why the Madden curse should continue, and we answer some questions in What Up Windbags. This episode of the Autumn Windbags is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. There
he is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto here, heading into late June. Just 82 days away.
82 short days.
Day. Raiders, Ravens, Monday Night Football, home opener, new stadium, first time with fans. It feels far away, but it's creeping up, Soto. 82. It was like, when you go from 89 to 82, it feels like it's dragging. But then next week, it's going to be 75. Next week after that, it's going to be
68.
You know, like it's going to start feeling like it's less and less the closer we get.
Yeah. Every week, it's just going to seem like it's so far, but not really. When you look back at like, oh, well, last week it was this number. Now it's this. Like, oh my God. But yeah, we're getting closer. There's a lot of new things happening with the team, and hopefully it's all good stuff.
What new things are you talking about, Soto?
I've heard something about one of our guys. I don't know. He was on social media or something, on Twitter.
Yeah. Made some news this week. So Carl Nassib, our defensive end, came out this week, released a video and a social media post coming out of the closet, and he's gay. He is the very first active NFL player to be openly gay. He posted a video talking about how it's something he's been dealing with for 15 years. He's generally a private person. He just wanted to let the world know and be himself. It's a weight off his shoulders. And he made history this week. And this is there's a lot of moving parts here, right? So yeah. One of them is, so like if I was a professional football player making millions of dollars and superstar, I would make it the biggest deal ever. I'd be like, I'd have my book deal already done. I'd have like the rights sold to my made for TV movie. I've had sponsorships lined up, right? Like I would cash in on this, right? Nassib, not at all. Very low key. He said, hey, I'm not going to be doing any interviews. And the timing was nice to not be a distraction. He waited until like mandatory mini camp's over before actual, you know, like preseason begins. So it's kind of like a quieter time in the season. Mm-hmm. And he chose this moment as an opportunity to bring attention to the Trevor Project, which is a nonprofit to try to get suicide prevention for LGBT youth. So I guess I didn't know this. LGBT youth are four times more likely to commit suicide than straight youth. So he took this opportunity. He waited until there was a quiet time in the off season, didn't make it about him, wanted to put all the attention, donated $100,000 to the Trevor Project. What a way to do it. Like I would have been pounding my chest, waving a rainbow flag saying, all right, look at me guys. That's like Archie's taking this opportunity to make himself more famous and make him some money. Nope. Not Carl Nassib. He's saying, put the attention on the people who need it.
Yeah. He was a very understated video, you know, just him and on his property, just kind of, you know, didn't have a rainbow flag waving in the background and, you know, born this way, blaring back there. It was just him with the birds chirping, telling his truth. And it was very tastefully done. He just came out and said it. This is why I'm saying it. It's a relief for me. I thank you for all the support. And it was refreshing, that someone in the end currently in such an alpha type sport as the NFL would come out and feel comfortable enough to come out and say that.
Yeah. And I know everyone's thinking, what about Michael Sam? Well, he was drafted, practice squad, never actually played a down, never actually made a roster. So Carl Nassib, I mean, barring something unforeseen where he doesn't play next season, he's going to be the first openly gay football player in the NFL. I'm kind of surprised. Now, this was obviously the biggest news in Raiders, the biggest news in football. I'm a little surprised it hasn't been bigger news nationally. Like when he made this announcement, I believe it was Monday of this week when he came out with the announcement, you know, it was LA Times, New York Times, like all the news AP, like all the news, like accounts that I read and follow all mentioned it. Obviously it was all over ESPN and other sports
NFL Network, all
NFL Network. It was you know, it made a lot of news on Monday. Tuesday, it kind of simmered down and we're recording this Wednesday, the 23rd, and it's still kind of quiet. Right. I thought this would be monster news. And I guess the reason that is a few things. One, Nassib was so understated about it, right? Like if he would have come out and done like a Good Morning America interview, went on like Fox News and fought with somebody, right? Went on MSNBC and got his ass kissed, went on like another big, like, you know what I mean? Like he could have been doing the rounds and gotten more quotes, like really made this
really, really monetized it.
Yeah, yeah. Like really put the spotlight on himself. He didn't. He said straight up, I'm not going to be doing any interviews. I don't want this to be a really big deal. It's just, I wanted to get it out there and I want to play football and move on. So that's one reason, because he kept it very understated. And two, I think that's just kind of how like the place we are in society now, where we all kind of know, like, you know, whatever the number is, 3, 5, 7% of the human population is gay. And so you're like, all right, there's 53 players on 32 teams. Like they're there. Like there's definitely gay football players that just haven't come out yet. So we all kind of knew this day was coming. It just happened to be this day, happened to be this player. And so I think because of all that, this wasn't the monster news I thought it would be if it were like 1995.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think a lot of the reaction as far as teammates, fellow football players, media that praised Nassib for being brave enough to come out and being understated and not trying to be almost like
not going like with the RJ route.
Yeah. not going the RJ route, yep. Being a lot more tasteful. I think it normalizes it for a lot of people. Like for you and I mean, we have, you know, gay people very close to us, both of us. And it's like, you know,
live in Long Beach, which has like one of the biggest gay populations.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like,
our mayor's gay.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's normal to us. It's not normal to everybody.
Yeah.
Because not everyone has the access to be around people who are openly gay. And a lot of the support that Nassib's been getting, it's like, oh, well, no one's really tripping about this, you know. Yeah. It just seems normal, and it is normal. It is normal. So, it's a big story because he's the first one to willing to take that tag, willing to put that tag on him. Because no matter where he goes, it's almost like the whole we talked about the whole Waller thing. We're like, oh yeah, you know, he used to be, you know, an addict or whatever. It's like there's a tag that goes with you, whether it's a good or bad thing. I'm not going to get into that, but he's going to have that tag on him. He's willing to say, you know what, fine, I'll be the first to take it. Not a big deal, you know. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. It just seems like the right time. And what a great organization to do it, man. Yeah. The Raiders are an organization who's been known to buck the system, go their own way. First female. First minority coach,
first minority starting quarterback,
you know, first African American head coach, first woman executive, first Asian American executive who happened to be a woman.
Hands down, the most progressive organization in football in the NFL.
Yeah,
hands down. Like there's no close second.
And you know what really bugs me, and it's, I know there's just a lot of fucking idiots out there, but you know, I read some of the comments like, oh, it's going to be a awkward locker room. And I'm like, you really think his teammates didn't know? I mean,
maybe
not all of them, but you know, I really think there was at least a few teammates that knew. He wasn't an island unto himself.
Yeah, So I going back to my like why it's not, you know, I thought it would be much bigger news than it is. The third part of this too is I think where we are as a society is publicly everyone's going to be supportive, right? Because you definitely don't want to have the look of a bigot, right? In 2021, like you don't want to look like the guy that's going to like, you know, call NASA a fairy and say, oh, this is this doesn't belong in football. Like you would get canceled like that. Like you're done, right? So publicly, it's either support or silence out of everybody. But I also think it's like, so I have a buddy who's a Chargers fan that was texting me on Monday, giving me shit, right? It's like, oh, I hope this doesn't tear the locker room apart. Oh man, how brave of him, blah, 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 right? Because, you know, it's not, he's, you know, he doesn't care that he's gay. He just hates the Raiders. Like that's what he wants. Yeah. Like his hatred for the Raiders is much more passionate than his love or hate for any human being. Right.
What did I get? Of course it's a Raiders player or something like that. Like,
yeah.
I'm like
you're going to get, so that's where we are as a society where no one's going to post on social media or say publicly anything negative, but they'll give their boy shit in a private text message about it.
Oh yeah.
I think that's kind of where we're at. Yeah. But is there a worry for you at all that this could be any sort of distraction in the locker room? Like could this be, because another thing you said is like, yeah, I bet Richie Incognito is going to love him. It's like, I don't think Richie Incognito is more bipolar than he is a bigot, right? Like obviously he had his very obvious history and things that he said. I look at it more as him being like mentally unwell and bipolar than actually a bigot towards
a group. Yeah, he just has somebody. That bully.
Yeah. And he's taken such a leadership role now that this would be a drastic departure from the Richie Incognito now versus the one that played for like
that was
the
Bills like 7 years ago. Like, and people are treating it like it was 7 days ago. And it's, you know what? He was a grown adult that knew better back then. But the thing is, guys, I'm not into this whole cancel culture thing. It's fucking stupid. But people are bringing up tweets from like 10 years ago. And look, people are allowed to grow. People are allowed to progress. People are allowed to develop in their mindset, in their views and their ways of thinking. And it results in their actions. We haven't heard anything about Richie Incognito since. Mm-hmm. For all accounts, if he's counted on to be a leader on this team, a young team who has a very young offensive line, and you're counting on him to be a leader, dude, these guys, Gruden's not a stupid man. He's not going to bring somebody back in that position who's going to be a cancer to not just the offensive line, but to the whole team.
Well, he's brought some cancers in, right? He's brought some cancers into that locker room.
Not to be a leader, dude.
Not to be a leader.
But the thing, as far as NASA goes, look, AJ Hawk said it in the very beginning. If you produce, people are going to look away on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Okay. But you got to produce. He's talking about Ocho Cinco just walking out of practice because he didn't feel like it. He wasn't getting a lot of balls in practice. He said, fuck this, I'm out. Like, dude, if you produce, people are going to, he's all right. Don't worry about him. My biggest fear is what we were talking about beforehand, is that he, you know, is he going to be kept around even if he doesn't produce? I mean, he's getting paid a lot of money a year for what, 2.5 sacks last year? Oh, what was that?
Yeah, I'm allergic to Carl Nassib stats. So that leads us to the football part of it, right?
Yeah.
The fans of the other 31 teams in the NFL and non-football fans get to look at this from the outside and be like, oh, great, wonderful, right? Yeah, another progressive move. Carl Nassib gets to be himself. You know, one step forward for, you know, equality for a segment of our population that doesn't have a great history of getting a lot of equality in our society, right? But it's the Raider fans that look at this a little differently. One, Natson played like shit last year for what we're paying him.
He did really bad last year.
He did not play well. Like that was, in all fairness, there's a lot of guys on defense that got paid a lot of money that didn't play very well. So he's certainly not on his own right there, right? But you know what? He had 2.5 sacks. He averaged like 2 tackles a game. A healthy scratch thing, for a couple games. Like,
yeah, that was my big.
That's a major issue.
My main thing is, if we're paying you like what, $9 million a year?
I think it's $9 million against the cap next season.
Yeah. And you're a healthy scratch multiple times in a year. That means you're not good enough to even be on the roster as a backup.
Yeah.
That's what that, and we're paying you more. Like, we can get five players to play to make up your salary. Mm. And you can't even be on the field for a couple games. It wasn't because he was injured. It's because he was a healthy scratch. What a healthy scratch means. You're healthy and you're just seen as not good enough to play. That's concerning. That is, as far as the football goes, that is very concerning.
And now the spotlight's going to be massively on him next season. So if he doesn't deliver next, I mean, every Raider game, it's going to be brought up. Every time he takes the field, it's going to be, you know, he's going to have a lower third, Carl Nassib, first openly gay player in the NFL. You know, he's going to be followed. Like last season, he was buried as a bad player on a bad defense, right? He was just one of, you know, when you think of like, oh man, I can't believe the guys didn't produce. He was only like number four on the list, right? You're thinking Corey Littleton and you know, all these other guys that just shit the bed on defense.
Joiner. Course.
Joiner, like he was low on the list. He was on the list, but he was low on the list.
Yeah.
He's not going to get lost in the shuffle next season.
Well, here's the thing too. Don't underestimate the power of peace of mind. We don't know. He said he's been holding this in for 15 years, man. That's a long time to be holding basically your whole persona back. That is who he is. It's not like, oh, this is like a hobby of mine or whatever. That's who he is as a person. It's not all of who he is, but at the fundamental core, this is his life. This is a big part of his persona.
Yeah.
And to hold that back and to keep that from people, we don't know what kind of emotional toll that took on him. He could just be a lot more free, a lot more carefree, and a lot more just comfortable with himself. And he could play a lot better. I know that you and I, you know, were close to the fight game. And when people are nervous, you can't get over that. There's nothing you could do to make somebody not nervous. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You can try to help them, but once someone is comfortable, once someone is calm, it's very hard to shake them, especially when they're going into like a very stressful situation, like a fight. You make someone calm and comfortable. Okay, I'm good. No worries.
So what you're saying is Carl Nassib needs a release of some kind.
I think he already got his release as far as an idiot. his release.
Hey, can we just give ourselves a high five? We're what, 15 minutes into this show? We didn't make one joke yet.
What is this business? You're the one making jokes.
Hey, we're in this together, dog. You're going down with this ship, right?
Damn it.
We went a good 15 minutes. Hey, we deserve credit for this, right?
Like my media career is over before it started.
This has always been my stance, right? I am equal opportunity for everybody. There's no hate in my heart for anyone, but I reserve the right to make my jokes about anything. Anything at all. I reserve my right to make the jokes, right?
Yes, RJ, he did get a release. He's looking for a release.
Okay. Okay, good.
Fucking jerk.
I mean, come on. Like, I waited 15 minutes of the show before I said, like, hey, just I can't wait until the announcer's like, wow, Carl Nassib's really chasing after that big sack. Come on. You're gonna lose your shit. Come on.
Oh boy.
Too bad we don't have Rory on this show anymore, because then it'd be a perfect time to do a Rory's grinder.
God damn it.
Perfect timing. All right. I got out of my system.
Send all your complaints to RJ Clifford MMA at Twitter.
Those are very tasteful. Come on, relax. We're on the internet.
moving on.
So moving on. So my biggest takeaway, pure football wise, hopefully he plays better. One, just because I care more about the Raiders winning than I care about the happiness of any individual player on the Raiders.
Same.
I care. Hey, Nassib, you're a Raider. Love you. But I care more about wins and losses than if you're happy or not. Right. So hopefully he plays well, because the spotlight's going to be on him moving forward. And if he fails to, you know, to not deliver on his large salary, then it's going to be rougher for him than if he was just kind of another bad player on a bad defense. Right.
And there's also a built-in excuse for other teams not to sign him. Oh, his price tag is way too high.
Yeah.
We didn't think he would want to play for the league minimum, you know, or the veteran minimum, because he was making $9 million a year before. We didn't even give it a second thought.
Yeah.
It'll be unfortunate if Zach goes, but if he plays well, there's no question. If he plays well, he'll stick around.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, he has a 3-year, $25 million contract, $16.75 million guaranteed.
Woo.
We need more than 2.5 sacks for that kind of money.
Yeah, we need a lot more than that.
We need a little more than that. So this is something we've been thinking about for a while, because our offense has some shakeups this coming up this season, right?
Yep.
A lot, you know, not new faces on the offensive line, but we're missing three old faces that were on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. A new expensive running back, a new essentially Nelson Aguilar, basically.
A steal of a contract.
Jason Witten gone, which means our wonderful backup tight end is going to get a lot more snaps. So we thought, okay, let's predict our top eight offensive skill players for next season, right? The top eight MVPs on the Raiders in the 2021-22 season. And you'll see a lot of this. A lot of the names you think would be on here are on there, but maybe not in the order you think. And we're going to start out with one of the more beloved guys on the team, number eight, Hunter Renfrow. And I wonder if people are thinking, oh, that's kind of low for a guy who's like a starter and a guy that Derek Carr trusts and believes in. But I feel like we know what we have with Hunter Renfrow. He's not like Ruggs or Edwards where you're like, okay, the basement's really low, but the ceiling's through the roof. Mm-hmm. Renfrow is like, all right, the basement's pretty high. Like, he's never going to give you terrible games, bad drops, but how often is he going to get, but is he going to give you like, you know, like a 1500 yard receiving season, 10 touchdowns? Probably not. Probably. He's reliable, good in the slot, good hands. I still think he's going to be, I think he's a very underrated punt returner, really underrated punt returner. He was very close to breaking.
At least three punt returns, a couple against the Chargers. He was very, very close.
He had 56 receptions, 656 yards, and 2 touchdowns last season. What do you think? Number eight, Hunter Renfrow, right?
Yeah, well, he's number eight. The reason why he's that low is I don't think that the improvements that he's going to make are going to be that marked. You know, it's not going to be that huge of a jump. Mm-hmm. I could see him topping out at around 65, 70 receptions. Maybe 750 yards and a handful of touchdowns. Now, that's not slouch numbers, but that's not like an MVP type because of how he's used. He's used more so as a chain mover. One of the only ways that he's going to be a huge, huge asset and an integral piece is if he becomes more of a threat in the red zone. That's when he can be a huge threat because he is so precise and he's not super fast, but he's sudden and he can get open. Mm-hmm. And he's got great hands. So I see number eight being good for him. I see number eight being a good slot for him.
He's carved out a very important role, but generally a limited role. Like, okay, this is what you do. Like he's underrated speed. He can go deep. Right. But third and Renfrow.
No, let's just be honest here. His deep passes are going to be schemed. It's going to be the scheme got him open. It confused the secondary. And he's quick enough to get past him. And once he's past you, it's going to be hard to catch up to him. Yeah. He's not lining up one-on-one. You know what I'm going to do, and I'm still going to beat you. He doesn't have that kind of speed.
Number two, backup tight end, Foster Moreau. He played all 16 games last season, only had 7 receptions for 140 yards. So why do we make him number seven, Soto?
I believe he's going to be our true tight end throughout the season. I really do think someone who is going to be talking about later is more of a hybrid and going to play a lot of X position. Moreau has underrated hands, underrated catching ability, and underrated to the NFL, not to Raiders fans who know him. He can get open. He's quicker than you think. He's faster than you think. He's bigger than you think. And he's a matchup nightmare. In his rookie year, he had 5 red zone touchdowns. That's not something to sneeze at because you have all these other, you have an emerging Darren Waller that year. You have other players like Terrell Williams, who did really well when he was healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these other players that are there. And, you know, then you have Foster Moreau with 5 red zone touchdowns. now that he's a little bit more in tune with the system, he's going to be playing more of the traditional tight end role, on inline tight end. He's gonna he should receive a lot more targets.
Yeah, and not even just targets, but I think he's our best blocking tight end. I feel like he's going to see a lot of snaps. So like his biggest issue last season was that John Gruden picked up Jason Witten for whatever reason, right? And Jason Witten took all of Foster Moreau's snaps. He's an above average tight end. He just happens to be in the same team as Darren Waller.
One of the best two, three in the league.
Yeah, one of the best out there. So he gets overshadowed, but he's going to be on there a lot in an offense that uses a lot of tight end. And I think, like you mentioned, I think Waller's going to be moved around, lined up outside. You know, he's going to be moving all over the place. Foster Moreau is going to be in a three-point stance with his ass next to a tackle, you know, blocking very, very well and running routes and being great in the red zone. There's going to be a lot of two tight end sets. He's going to do a lot of run blocking. He's going to be a really good guy for play action, I think. And also, like, you think about what's deeper in our offense, our tight end room or our wide receiver room? Our tight end room. Like, who'd you rather have on the field? Like Foster Moreau and Darren Waller or Zay Jones or, you know, like all these other like random wide receivers. So I think he's going to get a lot of playing time. And I think I think he'll be the seventh most valuable player. Skill player on our offense. Number six. It comes after seven.
Yeah.
Henry Ruggs III. First wide receiver taken in the draft last season. He'll be the fastest player on the field in almost every single game he's in. Kind of underwhelming last season. He played 13 games, injured for three, 26 receptions, 452 yards, two touchdowns, a couple giant plays, flashed his brilliance a couple times, but unanimously and overwhelmingly considered a bust in his rookie year. But we made him number six.
This is a tough one. He can be as high as two.
Yeah.
It all depends. I'm very hesitant, especially at receiver, when you have such an elite talent like Waller as a pass catcher as well. There's only one football. As much as John Gruden likes to run the ball, not to say that he's going to be play poorly, but some of his names coming up on this list are poised to have a big year. I struggled putting him in the three slot, maybe three, four. I didn't necessarily agree with six, but that's what we agreed upon.
You think you should be higher or lower?
I think it should be a little bit higher, but again, that's all speculation.
But then it comes down to over who, right? So you're like, okay,
exactly.
Like it, yeah. Right. If you put him, I mean, and this is a nice problem to have when we think Henry Ruggs is only going to be the sixth best skill player next season. Like my big thing is like the guys above him have already proved it and he hasn't yet. And again, the ceiling is through the roof for Henry Ruggs. Like he could be amazing. And we know that he was under the radar hurt last season. So hopefully that's why his rookie year wasn't that great. But I think John Gruden is committed to him, which is why like I was tempted not even to put him in the top eight. But yeah. I think because Gruden is committed to him and he will get opportunities that other wide receivers on the team won't. Because even if his role is just what he had last season, he still stretched the field. He still opened guys up underneath. He still contributed even when the ball wasn't in his hands. Mm-hmm. So between even when he's not getting the ball thrown to him, what he does for this offense, how high his ceiling is, and the fact that he was injured last year, I think six is fair. But I think Henry Ruggs is anyone on this list. He's the one where I'm like, okay, I just made him six because that's like an average. He could be out of the top 10, or he could be two.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because unless you're proven to be a dominant player as a pass catcher, you're relying heavily on the quarterback to get you the ball.
Yeah.
So with all the other threats that we have as pass catchers, he really needs to separate himself from all those different options in order to climb up this list. Is it possible? Of course it is. It's definitely possible, but we really have to go out. There's a certain amount of projection here, but there's also like speculation, but there's also, we have to temper it with some realism. Like, okay, how much can we expect them to improve in this year?
Yeah, this isn't a hope contest, right? This isn't our who we hope is going to be the best. It's who we really think would be it.
Yeah.
Number five, Pro Bowler, only in the top five. Josh Jacobs, starting running back, played 15 games last season. 1,065 yards for a 3.9 yards per carry average, 12 touchdowns, and like I mentioned, Pro Bowl. Only five, though.
Yeah, you know, I see him topping out right there, about 12. That's a lot of touchdowns. 12 touchdowns is a lot of touchdowns. He's going to be around that 1,100 yard mark, hopefully, still again. But I really do think his yards per carry is going to go up significantly. Yep. Probably like almost a yard.
Because it dropped about a yard between his rookie year. So yeah. He had 3.9 yards per carry. I think he had 4.8 his rookie year, yeah. 3.9 last season, which is, that's a massive drop. Like, that's nothing to snicker at.
It's a huge drop.
Only because he got 270 attempts did he get over 1,000 yards.
Yeah, we've seen it before. The 250 attempt threshold, once you get too far above that too often, Listen, the Derrick Henrys of this world are very few and far between.
Yeah, literally okay? One.
This is the one Derrick Henry in this world, all right? The last thing we saw to a Derrick Henry type, I think we could say with the speed combination, was a young Eddie George, and look how long he lasted.
Yeah.
Big, huge back, just running over everybody, and he lasted about maybe four good years, mm-hmm. and then he had some mediocre years, and then he was out of the league. But Derrick Henry's still going strong. If you take a look at the Carolina Panther tape last year, the first game of the year, Jacob was running through tackles. He was dragging people 3 or 4 yards down the field. He was making players miss. We didn't see that the second half of last year. The amount of touches that he's getting for the size of back he is, he's not a small guy, but as far as a running back goes, he's not very big to be able to take that kind of punishment that often.
He's a small guy for his style of running.
He's a small bruising for his style, back. Correct.
5'10", 220, like he's a thick boy, but a dude that like looks for contact.
Yeah, he doesn't shy away from the contact. And I think he's right where he's going to be. If he gets to that 1,000-yard, 1,100-yard around there, if he gets that again with the lower number of rushing attempts, I think that's going to be a big win for us. I think it's definitely possible, because if he runs the way he did against Carolina the whole year, it's definitely possible.
Things going for him next season, Gruden is so committed to the run, and he loves Jacobs, so he's going to get his carries.
And he's committed to Jacobs specifically as a ball carrier.
Yeah, and because he's the type of runner that Gruden wants, right? He wants a smash-mouth football, a guy that can catch the ball, a guy that can block, but mostly he wants you to just, like, put the fear of God in those linebackers and get those safeties creeping up and put an extra guy in the box. I do think, even though his yards dropped last season, I think that had more to do with the offensive line getting reshuffled a bunch and less about his style of running.
I don't know, man. Look, I'm telling you right now, I watched that tape, and every time he had contact, he was getting another 2-3 yards. That wasn't happening towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Now, well, it had nothing to do with the offensive line. That was him being able to run through the defender.
And he's going to get some rest this season with, Kenyon Drake, and then we'll have other guys. Maybe Alec Ingold, I think, is probably going to get some more carries this season. He's going to get some breaks. He's been injured every single season, his first two seasons. The chance of him getting injured this season are less than the last two. Still likely, right? I mean, the way he runs, probably, but less likely this time. The things he got going against him. He's going to lose a lot of carries to Kenyon Drake. The offensive line, I'm still optimistic about this new offensive line, but it's very safe to say there's still questions about this O-line. They went a little smaller and a little quicker, which makes me think, okay, outside run plays, pass blocking, they'll be better. But the just wall of violence that was Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson, Trent Brown. Like, that's just not there anymore. Not that style anymore, which is neither bad or good, but it's not great for Jacobs. And also, he was so committed last season to being a better pass catcher, and he never really did. Like, he, I think his role, you know, the idea that he's going to really diversify his role has taken a step back. It can still happen. Look, it's his third season, right? The guy's
diversify his bonds.
The guy's what, 23? Like, of course.
Yeah, he's
like,
going to be 23. Yeah,
he's going to be 23. Like, of course, he can still get better at other things. But it's, you know, that giant leap we thought he'd take in season two, he didn't. Number four, and we debated this. I thought Jacob should be four and this guy should be five, but we negotiated. You think we Kenyon Drake at number four, a brand new, highly priced running back. Last season, he played 15 games, had almost 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. Really diverse player, and definitely that Joker guy that John Gruden's been looking for.
John Gruden has had a hard-on for a Joker position player. He's been talking about making this person and that person, all this stuff. He finally has a guy that has been that guy. Now, MVP, as far as overall numbers, I don't think he's going to get the touches that Jacobs gets. So I don't think that's going to be it. I think for Drake, it's going to be the chunk plays, the big, the over 15 yard, the over 20 yard plays, because he's definitely capable of doing that. And that's how he was used, I think, in a de facto way in Miami, because I don't know if they really knew what they had initially with Drake. They had a couple other guys that they were using at the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Drake is necessarily a lead back for an entire year. But if you put him in positions to succeed, which John Gruden knows how to do that with an offense, I think he can be a very effective weapon in getting those big chunk plays, which is what we need, because we didn't really get them last year. We didn't really get those big plays last year.
Yeah, I think Josh Jacobs will get twice as many touches as Kenyon Drake, which is why I think he should be higher. But you're right that, like, Jacobs isn't going to get a specifically designed play that Gruden's been sitting on all game to get a touchdown. Drake will.
Drake's a finisher.
As he should be, right? As he should be. Josh Jacobs' longest touchdown pass last season was 28 yards. In 273 rushes, you should have a couple 50, 60-yard breaks, right?
At least a 40-yard or something.
And
like
he didn't, right?
The fucking corner fell down or something, and you would get 40.
Yeah, but like you should get a couple, and he really didn't. Kenyon Drake, like you said, is that guy. Like, he's the guy that could just
What was Drake's 40 time? I'm interested to see that, because I don't see Jacobs as being slow, but I do see him as being a sudden, and he's able to make guys miss. Drake is just fucking fast.
Fast burst speed and good change of direction speed. Like, he's the guy in open space that you want him to just be dancing around, you know, safeties that are overcommitting. But like I said, I think he's going to be lined up outside. He's going to be having passes thrown to him. He's going to have screen passes designed for him. Like John Gruden will have in his back pocket Kenyon Drake specific. We want this play to blow wide open. And I've been setting up this play all game. Kenyon Drake's going to get those plays. Jacobs won't.
Yeah. So just to circle back on my last question, Josh Jacobs ran a 4.640, which is, I mean, pedestrian as far as a running back goes.
Yep.
He's never seen as a game breaker or anything like that. And this just shows you what a freak Darren Waller is. Oh my God, he's so Kenyon Drake is fast and this and that. They have the same 40 time, 4.45.
Yeah.
And Drake is like a foot taller and 30 pounds heavier. Fuck. Waller is a foot taller and about 40 pounds heavier. So yeah, that's what a freak he is. 4.45 is Kenyon Drake.
So yeah, I still think Jacobs will be more valuable because I think he'll get much more touches, but Drake is that Joker, is that wild card. I think they'll have about the same amount of touchdowns, even though Drake will get way less touches.
So there was a lot of times, especially 2 years ago, when Alec Ingold was the primary pass catcher out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a good job of catching the ball, but he didn't have that burst to get those yards that the play designed.
Yeah.
And so that's why I believe that's why the drop off in his touches towards the second half of his rookie year And then last year where he didn't get a lot of touches because he just didn't have that burst to be able to make the play happen the way it's designed. I think Drake's going to fill that role, and he definitely does have that explosiveness to be able to make that play happen.
Number three, and I think this might be the most controversial one out of all of them, but I'm
I didn't really agree with this one, but
I'm pretty confident in it though. John Brown, our brand new wide receiver, cheap, $5 million, coming from the Bills. Last season, he played 9 games because of injury, 33 receptions for 458 yards, 13.9 average, and 3 touchdowns. So obviously last season is a little bit of a novelty because of his injury. But normally
and a guy called Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, and a guy called Stephon Diggs. He played in his career 96 games, 31 touchdowns. I remember when we first signed him, you're like, you texted me, what the heck? Well, this guy, this hack, what are we doing? I'm like, dude, look at his numbers. Look at his play. He's better on paper than Nelson Aguilar. I'm convinced he's going to be this season's Nelson Aguilar. Like, Bryan Edwards doesn't pan out. Henry Ruggs doesn't pan out. You know, you can't just throw the ball to Darren Waller 25 times a game, right? John Brown, I'm convinced, can be that guy. Veteran. He's going to make the team better. I think he's going to be this next season's Nelson Aguilar. I think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver. He's going to be Derek Carr's favorite wide receiver target. He's the guy, and he's going to be the number one wide receiver on this football team next season.
I don't know, man. The thing is, you really have to take a look at one thing that we've been talking about a lot, which is Bryan Edwards. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a couple of things I think going against Bryan Edwards. One of them was the number 7 player that we talked about was Foster Moreau. Now, how does that figure into Bryan Edwards? Well, if Foster Moreau is playing the tight end, he's not spelling Darren Waller every single time he's out there. Mm-hmm. Darren Waller is going to be moved into more of an X position. And let's just between us, okay?
Okay, no one's listening. Let me hit pause.
No one's listening anyway. There's 3 people out there, I think. Darren Waller is an X receiver. We call him a tight end to steal money, so we don't have to pay the man. But he's an X receiver. He's a big receiver that can block. Mm-hmm. What? Okay, now we can go back to fantasy.
Ooh, record.
Okay. Bryan Edwards is not going to have the chances that a true starting X receiver would have because Waller's going to play that role quite a bit. If Bryan Edwards can make the most of his opportunities, I don't see John Brown hitting the field all that often because John Brown is basically an older version of Henry Ruggs, the same player. He's not an X receiver. Can he play the X? I'm sure he could, but he's more of a Henry Ruggs type player. And if Henry Ruggs is another if, right? If the queen had a dick, she'd be the king. If Ruggs stays healthy and shows even a slight improvement, and Bryan Edwards shows what he can do, I don't see John Brown hitting the field all that often, honestly.
That's what I'm saying, is that's a lot of ifs, right? Like I'm going on what we've got, like what you've already shown me, not your potential, right? There's a little potential in there, but I'm going on, all right, what have you given me, not what I hope your ceiling is. And John Brown has proven to be a number one wide receiver in the NFL. He's proven to be reliable. He's proven to be good hands. He's still got his speed. He knows the game of football. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Derek Carr, if I'm John Gruden, like we love Henry Ruggs. We love Bryan Edwards. Like, we want them to succeed clearly. Like, and again, we're not giving up on them by any means, but we're banking on them showing us something we haven't seen before. Yeah. I'm banking on John Brown continuing to show us what he's always done. And that's to be this season's Nelson Aguilar for $5 million.
Yeah. Well, and the thing too, this mindset is not unprecedented. All you have to look at is Edwards and Ruggs were the starters last year, and as soon as Aguilar started showing out, he became the starter and he started getting the looks. He wasn't in the plans to be anything special, kind of a veteran leadership type of guy, show everyone how it's done. As soon as they started making plays, they started feeding him the ball. So John Gruden doesn't give two shits where you were drafted, who you are, any of that shit. If you're starting to play, if you're being productive, he's going to plug you into the system.
Number two, QB1, Derek Carr. Played all 16 games last season, had a 67% completion rate, 4,100 yards, 27 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. His third consecutive 4,000-yard season. Each year under Gruden, he has improved in just about every single category. And of course, quarterback, you're always going to be ranked higher when it comes to how valuable you are at the position. The second most valuable skill player for the Raiders next season will be QB1 Derek Carr.
Well, yeah, it's unless he completely falls on his face, which I don't really see happening. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the running for team MVP, offensive, you know, skill player MVP, because he has the ball in his hands. And if anyone else has a big year, it's because he's getting him the ball.
Yep.
So I think it's kind of a no brainer here. The last two, I think people know who the last two are, but yeah, I don't see Carr really taking a step back. If anything, I see him, his numbers being cleaned up a little bit, maybe not statistically improve, but maybe he has a little bit more, you know, he has some more longer plays, his maybe average depth of targets a little bit further down the field. Maybe his completion percentage is a little bit better. Maybe he has more touchdowns, but I don't see the yards because I do see Drake and Jacobs combo being a lot more successful running the ball.
As it should be for what we're paying Drake and what, you know, how high Josh Jacobs was drafted. My big thing with Derek Carr is he improved in the ways that he has the biggest knocks. Like his yards per average was the highest of his career. We're saying, oh, he doesn't throw the ball deep enough. He threw it deeper on average last season than he ever has in his career. Oh, he doesn't.
And he needs to go deeper.
And well, he's going in the right direction, right? Like he's trending in the direction. He's trending in the direction away of all of his problems, right? Mm-hmm. He's moving around the pot. He's still, you know, certainly no Michael Vick, but he's moving around the pocket better than he ever has. Still can be better. Throwing it deeper than he ever has. Still can be deeper. I mean, again, the obvious one, other than the fumbles, he's improved in all the areas where you give him the biggest trouble. And he's just so damn good pre-snap. Like he's so good.
He does a lot.
Pre-snap. He's a computer back there. And he runs Gruden's offense perfectly. Fourth season with with John Gruden. And he's got so much depth on his offense now, which he never had before, right?
Yeah.
2.5 really great tight ends. Multiple receivers that fit multiple roles if guys fall through, right? Like you said, if Brian Edwards, if Henry Ruggs falls apart, John Brown's right there. You know, if Hunter Renfrow, you know, starts falling apart, Willie Snead can pick up that slack, right? Like the writers have been raving about Zay Jones for seasons now, and he never gets any love.
Like, yeah,
he's always there to potentially be something, right? Like
I don't think so.
There's
whatever.
Anyway, yeah, he's got two starting running backs. Like he's got so many weapons that like it's again, he's like he doesn't even have to be a really good quarterback. He can be a game. Like we want more of him, right? He's a franchise quarterback. He needs to be a playmaker, a game winner. But he's almost got a team where he can just be a game manager type quarterback. Like he's almost at the point where he can just kind of be a Flacco. It's like, don't screw up.
Don't screw it up.
Give it to all your skill guys.
Yeah.
That's how good this offense is getting.
One thing that I want to bring up really quick. It's a little bit for later in the episode. I don't think we're really going to get to it. So I'm just going to mention it right now that you said the down the field thing. There's a stat called ADOT, average depth of target. Mm-hmm. He was a high teens. In the high teens against pressure. So it's not taking into account your completion percentage. It's your average depth of target. How far are you passing the ball down the field when you have pressure on you? The top six in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson. Well, that's five. One, two, three, four, five. Well, top five, excuse me.
Yeah.
Are the top five. What the fuck? I'm not a math major. So they're the top five ADOT against pressure. Mm-hmm. And Carr was in, I think, the high teens, like 17 or 18. So that's something that needs to be cleaned up a little bit. We talked about it last week. He can still be a game manager and work within the system, because deep shots are built into this system. Mm-hmm. You just got to be able to just let the ball rip. And he has the arm to do it. He has, if his playmakers step up, if he has more than one guy that's been reliable at catching that deep ball, he's got two now. Yeah. He's got Waller on one side and whoever the fuck else on the other. Yeah. I'm excited.
So before we get to number one, let's just mention who didn't make this list that might surprise people. So Jalen Richard, not on the list. I think Kenyon Drake has just taken all of Jalen Richard's touches next season.
All his value, basically. I mean, not all his value as far as what we've seen from Jalen Richard in the past. I think now he's relegated him to a backup, to the backup and a special teams guy.
I don't think he's gonna make this team, actually. I mean, he's due for $3.5 million next season, and that's more than Josh Jacobs makes. Like,
I think
he's gonna be a cap casualty.
Go. I hate to see him go because he's such a freaking solid dude.
Yeah.
But we can maybe flip him for a sixth or seventh with someone gets hurt somewhere else. Because mm-hmm. Richard has been shown flashes to be able to make things happen if you plug him into the right system and the right circumstance. If not, yeah, I see him being a cap casualty as well.
Also on the list, Bryan Edwards. Yep. He's been brought up multiple times during this segment about just didn't show us last season. Again, ceiling through the roof. He could be our number one wide receiver, a true X. He's shown flashes of it at times. And maybe, you know, again, it's the same excuse that every team has, but I feel like the Raiders use it more often. But they'll have a non-COVID training camp this season, a full offseason, full OTAs. Hopefully that'll help him out. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't pan out, there's just too many guys that can take that spot. Like Darren Waller essentially is an X. He does have going for him that he's only the true X wide receiver. There's really nobody like him on the team. So I think he's going to get multiple shots, but until he can put together a semi-consistent season, mm-hmm. it's hard to think that he'll be, you know, a top eight MVP in the skill position.
Well, there's a saying about players and their ceiling. Mm-hmm. You look up at a ceiling a lot more than you look down on a ceiling. So it's like you have you have those expectations of a ceiling of what a player can be, mm-hmm. and more often than not, it exceeds the player's actual abilities and actual production.
The last guy I'll mention real quick, Willie Snead IV. He's the one. So I understand all the other receivers they brought in, right? You bring in John Brown in case Ruggs can't get his act together, right? You bring in Kenyon Drake to be explosive. But Willie Snead, though, he's basically in there to be another Hunter Renfrow, but Renfrow's beloved and proved that he can be a great slot guy. So he's kind of just basically a backup for Renfrow, not a safety valve for Renfrow. Not a safety valve in case Renfrow doesn't pan out. He's already basically panned out. It's just kind of, all right, let's give Hunter a couple, a drive off, you know, for a break, and then get Willie Snead in there.
Yeah, freaking Renfrow just got annihilated on punt return again. Let's see if he's alive. He has his faculty.
This lineman was allowed to do a helmet to helmet tackle running on Hunter
40
Renfrow.
Fucking yards straight into his head, and oh, that's fine.
If a Raider did that to another player, they would be executed on site. But do it to a Raider. All right, number one, no question about it, no doubt about it, Darren Charles Waller. Played
Darren
all 16 games last
dreamy
season.
Dreamy eyes, Waller.
107 receptions, almost 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns, the fastest tight end in football. At worst, the second best pass-catching tight end in football. At worst, the third best overall tight end in football. The best bang for your buck in football,
with one of
the
best football
contracts in all of football. Fantastic team leader, fantastic teammate. He's improved every season. He's finally getting the credit he deserved. He's bracketed on almost every play. So, and he's still getting his yards. He's still getting his receptions. He's opening up for other players. He is the most valuable skill player in Las Vegas with a bullet. No question. No hands down. God bless him that he's a Raider. And I can say in John Gruden's 3 seasons with the Raiders so far, Darren Waller's his greatest accomplishment. Signing him, finding him, making him a star, keeping him for cheap.
And goddamn, is he handsome.
Beautiful man. A beautiful, beautiful man. Any predictions?
There's not much you can say about the guy, man. Look, even if he regresses, if his numbers regress slightly, I don't think anyone will look down on him. It's going to be because there's so many other options.
I honestly think his numbers will regress next season. I think he'll be a better player, but I think between, you know, hopefully Ruggs gets better. So that deep ball.
There's only one football.
Yeah, you know, one football. And I think he's going to take, you know, I think Ruggs is going to keep the safeties deep. Waller is going to be bracketed. And so Brown, Renfro, Drake, like there's going to be some guys that like are going to be one-on-one and those are going to be great matchups. And how often are they going to go one-on-one with Darren Waller, right? Like he'll get his design plays and he'll be a star and he'll have, you know, 160-yard, 3-touchdown game this season, no doubt about it. But there's just so many other targets now and everybody knows what he is now. This isn't 2 seasons ago where he exploded out of nowhere and became a surprise. Like every single defensive coordinator, every single week is going to think of 2 things. All right. Stop Jacobs, stop Waller. Those are their goals. Right. Mm. And so he's going to be facing that and opening up everything else.
And even when like, if I'm Derek Carr, because there are times where the defense tries to get a little cute. Mm-hmm. Right. And oh yeah, we've seen this formation before. This is going to go to this person. This is designed to go to that person.
Yeah.
And they single coverage Darren Waller. I'm always taking a peek over there. What's a snap? I'm always taking a quick little peek. If he's single covered, I'm just going to throw the ball up there.
Yeah.
Fuck it. You know, he's fucking a foot taller than everybody else. He's faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
He's just a freak athlete.
Like who can cover him one-on-one? Like, he's 6'6". How many corners have the hops and height to be able to hang with him?
How many corners are even 6'2"?
How many safeties have the coverage skills to handle him? How many linebackers can keep up with him speed-wise? Like, you can't cover the dude. You have to bracket him.
You have to. But the thing is that they don't always do it. They don't always do it. Not every single play. So, you know, that's my first look.
Yeah.
When I'm doing my drop back, I'm always taking a little peek over there. What's going on over there?
So those are our top 8 skill players that we think will be the MVPs for the Raiders next season. Number 8, Hunter Renfro. Number 7, Foster Moreau. Number 6, Henry Ruggs III. Number 5, Josh Jacobs. Number 4, Kenyon Drake. Number 3, John Brown. Number 2, Derek Carr. And number 1, Darren Charles Waller.
Darren motherfucking Waller.
Real quick before we get to Autumn Windbags, did you see the new Madden cover?
It was awful, dude.
Dude. Ugly.
It looks like someone took it off their phone.
Tom Brady just like sitting there like with a little smirk, trying to be cute, you know. Patrick Mahomes trying to be cute too. It's just like they're trying to be hard, but they want to make sure they look cute, you know. I can't tell you, I couldn't wish the Madden curse on a more deserving duo than Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes.
I'm never
week one, they both break their leg in the same day.
Oh, listen, I'm never going to wish an injury on any player.
That makes one of us because I'm wishing season ending injuries on both.
But I am one for tradition. So if tradition states that the person on the Madden cover doesn't play well, I mean, well, all right.
Yeah. It was meant to be, you know? That's fine.
Meant to be.
Other thing, did you see Henry Ruggs was 1 pin away from bowling a perfect game?
Last frame.
Rolls the ball. Knocks down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 pins. Bulls a 299. 1 pin away from bowling a perfect game. He actually took it way better than I thought he would.
I would be throwing people. I would be throwing people's nachos and beer. And
dude, that 12-pound bowling ball would be through a wall at that point. Like so close. I mean, the good thing is like he's a Raider, so he's used to dealing with frustration and disappointment. So I think that probably. That probably prepared him.
Somebody that's not that used to it.
Yeah. But what a great athlete, like to be able to do that on the football field and be 1 pin away from bowling a perfect game.
So my ex-wife's brother, my ex-brother-in-law, he is a very, very talented swimmer. He went to college on a swimming scholarship. And people don't think of swimmers as real athletes. Let me tell you guys, these fucking guys are huge. And they're just incredible athletes. Anything he picked up, he was good at right away. Yeah. He grabbed a golf club and just started, you know, a couple of minutes, 5-10 minutes. And then he's chipping balls in the bucket. I'm like, what the fuck? Tennis, all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, some people are just gifted that way.
And I mean, doing that, you know, compared to you just makes them look even that much better. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, because I'm a fucking hack.
The fuck if you ever want to look like Henry Ruggs, just be an athlete next to Juan Soto. Ready to do some what up windbags?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. Ryan Campbell. Soto hates Carr so much. He went to
How
Carr's,
much does he hate Carr?
He went to Carr's kids' Little League game and booed them. That's cold, Soto. That's cold.
Look, if I pay my hard-earned money for those party nachos and a soda, I want to see some results.
Yep. Dinner's for winners, kids.
Dinner's for
Get
winners.
Get your act together.
Dinner's for winners.
Man, you hate Carr so much. Jack Dawson. Wasn't till year 9 Peyton Manning reached the Super Bowl. He was also known for being a great regular season quarterback who fell short in the playoffs. What was the context on this one? I forgot.
We were talking about Derek Carr's struggles and him not winning a lot of games and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. Like he's a finished product because he's played 7 seasons. We know who he is.
Let's just slow down a little bit on the Peyton Manning fucking comparison because I have some numbers here. These are all things Peyton Manning did before winning a Super Bowl. You ready?
Yep. Hit me.
Okay. He was a 3-time NFL MVP, a 1-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, 3-time first-team All-Pro, a 2-time second-team All-Pro, a 2-time passing yard leader, 3-time touchdown passing leader. He was the passing percentage leader for 1 year, a 2-time passer rating leader, and he made 6 playoff appearances before winning the Super Bowl. So let's just – this is not a shitting on
Carr. So him and Derek Carr are basically the exact same thing.
Yeah, they're really not.
That's what you're trying to say.
They're really not, no. And I understand the overall, like, comparison. Like, well, yeah, neither one of them won a Super Bowl between this year and this year. Come on. It's just not the same comparison.
There are a lot of quarterbacks that didn't – like breakthrough until like year 8, 9, 10. I get that. That part makes sense.
But he broke through already. He just didn't win the Super Bowl. He was already fucking league MVP, freaking all kinds of shit.
Chest Rockwell says,
love it.
Loyalty? Bah! Carr's a phony. He simply sang what the fanboys want to hear. And this is, of course, last week when we were talking about Derek Carr and when he was saying how he wouldn't play anywhere else. He wanted to be a Raider forever. If he got like cut or traded, he'd probably retire. And we both said like, yeah, like that's, but look, let's say worst case scenario. Let's say Rockwell, you're exactly right. Let's assume you're exactly right. His teammates buy it. His teammates buy into it 100%. You ask any of his teammates, I love Derek Carr. He's the man. He's a great person. I'd go into battle for him. Not, oh, he has such great touch on his ball or, oh, he's so great at, you know, calling adjustments to the line of scrimmage. No, they love this guy. And these are guys that are with him nonstop. These like running backs and wide receivers and coaches and linemen, they're with Derek Carr more than most of us are with our families. Like that's how often they're with each other. And they all buy into it. And they all believe him. And they all think it's true. So worst case scenario, he's being a phony, but it's still a good thing. I think he's being very genuine there because he's one of the guys where he has yet to give us a reason to not believe him. He's never been the guy that's like talked great about one player, stabbed him in the back, hyped up something, and then did opposite. Never been that guy.
Yeah, it's you can't fool everyone all the time. He's been in the league long enough where if his character was shaky in any way, it would have been outed.
Yeah.
He's had enough ex-teammates where those stories would get out. And no one said anything. He's by all accounts, he's a great teammate. And let's see if he could turn that corner into being a great leader, because you can't be a great leader and have everyone have nice things to say about you all the time. Because not everyone is doing whatever they have to do. Not everyone is putting in 100% effort.
I think you can be a great leader and have everyone love you, but it's how can you translate that love into results, right? Like, it's like having all your teammates love you is great, but now use that love to make them better and to make them play better. Like, he's never going to be a rah-rah type leader, but you know, you're an SC guy like Pete Carroll. All of his players loved him, but he turned that love into results.
Yeah, the one thing I really love about Pete Carroll when he was there, he said one thing his very first press conference when he got hired, because he was like the third choice. People forget about that. He was a washout in the NFL. He was a coordinator, defensive coordinator, stuff like that. And he coached what the Patriots and the Jets. And like, he didn't really do that well. He comes to SC and he's like, we have open competition for every position. And God damn it, if there wasn't an open competition for every position every single year that he coached there, nobody has a spot. Everyone has to compete in practice. It's about competition. Make everyone else better. And it helps when a player can't come to a coach and say, you let X player play ahead of me and he's not doing the job. That didn't happen there. So the play has to, the play and the results have to be there. But yeah, it's a good starting point to have your teammates really love and respect you.
And unlike Pete Carroll, Derek Carr didn't break every single rule in the NCAA rule book.
Allegedly.
Take a giant dump on the university and leave right before everyone got suspended. That was Pete Carroll's best job. Just shitting all over SE and bouncing for the NFL. All right, that's it for the Autumn Wind.
You're such an asshole.
Until next time, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've got a lot of new stuff on there that's not on the podcast. Plus, you get to see our smiling faces, which, you know, that's always great. Until next time, later.